American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard on corners in town. There's a cancer called crime in our cities, and an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back, put an end to the gangs and the drugs and the streets, and the fact that the bad guys most always go free, that is wrong. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, and take all our money and send it abroad.
Welcome back, my friends. Robbie Noel sitting in for John Stadtmiller on this 5th of July. In all the years that I've been on radio, if there's one request I always get, is to talk about the old country, now called Zimbabwe. When I was there, it was still called Rhodesia. Because I often make comparisons between growing up in Rhodesia and what I experienced when I later moved to South Africa, and what I see taking place in America today. Because it's an amazing thing. The similarities are rather stark. But in order to understand the similarities, you also have to understand the history of that neck in the woods. And although one can draw many parallels between the founders of America and some of the founders in Southern Africa, there's a big wide cavern that doesn't quite match. In that the colonists who came to Rhodesia were not seeking escape from tyranny from a monarchy known as Great Britain. In large part, these were adventurers who wanted to seek adventure, find new and unexplored lands. And so, making a comparison between the early settlers in the United States and the early settlers in Africa, as I said, is not a good one, just simply based on that premise. In that they weren't looking for freedom. As a matter of fact, they warmly embraced the monarchy and wanted to help, as Cecil Rhodes said, plant the Union Jack from Cairo to Cape Town. He had the grand vision of a one-world government. Cecil John Rhodes's vision is alive and well today and is promoted and its policies implemented by what we now know as the Council on Foreign Relations. Council on Foreign Relations came to America in 1913 from its British counterpart called the Round Table, which was Cecil Rhodes' secret organization that he formed with the huge amount of resources that he amassed in Southern Africa and who the country of Rhodesia is named after. And so in order to understand a lot about Africa and a lot about its history, I decided to spend the next 2 hours telling you what is an adventure. It's an adventure tale. It's about a people that I had a great affection to, but who are no longer around anymore, and they're not a threat to anybody. And so now the story can safely be told when we return.
Are you one of the millions who have trouble waking up every morning? Hit the snooze a few too many times? Need that morning cup of coffee to get you started? Why not put a little spice in your morning with Gano Cafe? Gano Cafe, a healthy coffee, gives you energy and vigor, increases your focus and mental clarity. Gano Cafe helps the body heal itself, strengthen the immune system, and waste elimination for detoxification. If you're a coffee drinker, you won't believe the wonderful taste of this great coffee. Ganoderma, commonly known as the reishi mushroom, has been utilized in Chinese medicine for over 2,000 years. Also known as the longevity herb, miraculous king of herbs, it's more powerful than ginseng and has much lower caffeine and acid. To get your cup of great-tasting coffee, go to healthycoffeeonline.com or call 1-888-841-6055. That's 1-888-841-6055.
Can you grow your own nutrition on a shelf indoors in 10 days? Wheatgrass juice is live superfood, the richest nutritional liquid known to man, packed with amino acids, living enzymes, and over 100 elements. 2 ounces of juice have the same nutrition as 3 pounds of Choice Garden produce. Call 1-877-699-4328. That's 1-877-MY-WHEAT. The stamina, healing, blood building, weight control, and cleansing are just the beginnings of what you will reap from pennies worth of grain. For the book, seed, and the beautiful stainless steel hand crank wheatgrass juicer for $150 plus shipping. No monthly pills, no monthly bills. This is real self-sufficiency. Go to AustinWheatgrass.com or call toll-free 1-877-MY-WHEAT. That's 1-877-699-4328. And thank you for your support of our labors and of the RBN network.
With all the junk food, fast food, and pre-cooked meals out there, do people actually consume the nutrients that will improve their health? Everyone starts with good intentions. A few pills here, a glass of juice there, but what about an entirely new approach to wellness? What about a brand new market of nutrient delivery? Triathletes and marathon runners often down small packets of gel, providing a timely blast of energy. And why couldn't this exact system work for daily consumption of vitamins and minerals? It can. Through suspension gel technology, our daily nutrients can be taken anywhere, quickly and easily. Think about it. No glasses, no supersized pills, no waterlogged juices, no ineffective sprays and creams, just pure, concentrated nutrients in an easy-to-take, rapidly absorbed, taste-bud-busting gel. You squeeze in your mouth. A great way to get your daily nutrients. For more information to improve your health, call 1-888-841-6055. That's 1-888-841-6055. Or go on the web at together.ws.
Get ready for Real Talk Radio. You're listening to the National Intel Report with your host, John Stadtmiller.
This is more like old-time radio because this is an adventure story. This is about an Anglophile subspecies of man that was born at the beginning of the 20th century. They flourished for a brief period in Central Africa, then became extinct through a process of unnatural selection, wherein the law of the jungle was reversed, where weaknesses were encouraged and strengths were opposed by a political world who, in its collective wisdom and need for quick fix solutions, was relieved that it was the expedient thing to do. Those Anglophiles were called Rhodesians. They were the last remnants of the British colonial era in Africa. It is difficult to avoid the politics that infested the lives of the characters during a time of huge transformation when the winds of change blew through that continent. However, this story is not intended as a political commentary, nor is it an intellectual debate on the rise and fall of civilizations. There is no attempt made here to make comparisons with the savage and marauding British as they remorselessly attacked the Roman garrisons on a remote misty island in the far reaches of Caesar's empire. This story is simply an expose of how a doomed species, The last wild colonial boys lived in Africa, what they thought and how they behaved. It is an account of what happened in our time, and in some aspects is still going on today in this enlightened age. You see, the story can now safely be told because the Rhodesians are gone. Nobody cares what happened to them, and they are no longer a threat to world peace. Perhaps in a small way it will explain why, having outlived their usefulness to the ex-colonial powers, they were hated for holding up the march of progress for 15 years, or why they never apologized for doing so. They lived in two Rhodesias, northern and southern, now called Zambia and Zimbabwe, respectively. And during the political transformation, they migrated to the south and made their last stand in a civil war also known as the War of Liberation. They loved that landlocked little country, that 150,000 square mile spot on the map, located 200 miles north of the Tropic of Capricorn in Central Africa. They loved it with a passion and a patriotism that can only be understood by those who feel the enormous satisfaction of having built something good out of nothing under remote and difficult conditions, and by those who share such feelings about their own homes. It is gone now, but few, if any, of the people who lived through the adventures in this story ever regret the time they spent in that country. Nor would any of those who grew up with the African landscape as their backyard have had it any other way. It was a magic time in a magic place. Essentially, this is the spirit in which we hope to share the story with you. Not the negative adversity and cultural conflict, which nevertheless were essential part of the unfolding drama, but the reason why those aging men and women remain loyal to the memories of their youth. The land stands at an altitude of 3,500 feet above sea level, with a wonderful temperate climate and an average summer rainfall of 35 inches per annum. There's very little jungle of the type which one imagines, with ferns and vines and forests. Most of the country consists of bush and savanna, but there are good rainfall areas located north of the old northern Rhodesia capital of Lusaka, north of the southern Rhodesian capital of Salisbury, where agricultural potential is very high. In the southern latitudes, it is a drier climate, and the soil is more leached, better suited to grazing than planting of crops. Running through the middle of this area in a northeasterly direction, dissecting north from south, is the Zambezi Valley, known as Hell on Earth. And it is where the Kariba Dam was built. And not much better since then. It's hot, dry, filled with wild animals, and infested with pestilence. This valley was a central feature of the last stand of the white man in Africa. It is a land first sparsely populated by bushmen, and there are many fine examples of bushman paintings to be found in caves and against rock faces throughout the country. About 500 years ago, the bushmen were followed by the indigenous Bantu-speaking African people who migrated down from the north and who introduced metalwork and subsistence agriculture. Ancient maps of the area show it depicted as a kingdom which was already conducting trade in gold and slaves with the Arabs in a port on the Indian Ocean, where the Portuguese occupied it in 1505. The great Zimbabwean ruins located in the east of the country have been associated with the Queen of Sheba and with the gold mines of King Solomon. The country is littered with evidence of ancient gold mine workings. European history of the country started with the missionaries, hunters, and adventurers who penetrated the interior in the 18th and 19th centuries. Rhodesia was born of its namesake, Cecil John Rhodes, and his financier, Alfred Beit, in the last wave, if you will, of British imperialism. For all practical references, Rhodesia came into being when the pioneer colony first raised the Union Jack at Cecil Square, Fort Salisbury, in 1890. There was a brief squabble over land rights with a minority. He was a dominant warrior, who was an offspring of the Zulu nation, the Matabele tribe, who had migrated up from the south some 50 years before. Their king was King Lobengulu, who ruled all the lands between the Limpopo River in the south and the Zambezi River in the northwest. From his royal kraal in Bulawayo, Lobengulu would send his impi regiments, complete with oxide shields and broad blade stabbing spears, north to Mashonaland to rustle cattle and abduct the woman. They were the last examples of the noble savage on the African continent. Thereafter, Rhodesia flourished for a 73-year period of rapid development, so much so that even Great Britain had long since lost its enthusiasm for colonial rule and the so-called white man's burden. It was allowed in 1923 to linger on under royal patronage as a responsible government. The country did enjoy a brief spell of active British support under Conservatives led by Winston Churchill during a 10-year experiment with federation, which lasted from 1953 to 1963, including Northern Rhodesia and Nyasaland. Technically, it was these two northern territories that were colonial, while the south was self-governing. Those were the heady days of Rhodesia. Capital and skills flowed in. The Federation territories were in a position to supply many of the commodities of the post-war reconstruction boom. Copper prices and bonuses from the vast copper deposits of the north, combined with gold mining, tobacco, cotton, beef, and maize products from the south. The currency was pegged to the British sterling and was of equal value, 12 pennies to a shilling, 20 shillings to a pound. There were the usual supplementary coins involved, like the two bob and the half crown, but the coin that had more character than all the others put together was the penny. Not only did it bear the names of the reigning sovereigns, such as King George, then later Queen Elizabeth, it was also designed for local conditions. The principal feature of the penny was that it had a hole in the center, and this allowed rural people to pass a leather thong through it, and it was a way that they could carry their wealth as a decoration about their person, as necklaces and headbands. Or they would hang those thongs of money in their huts. The status symbol of the sons of miners and the farmers were an Oxford education or the latest sports cars from Europe or America. Morale was high. And the Rhodesians boasted that they had the highest ratio of per capita achievers in the world. Made no difference whether that claim was true or not. What mattered was they all believed it. From business to commerce to sports, they did it all. No matter what, golf, motorcycle racing, rugby, tennis, they all did it well. Yes, they even had some Olympic glory. The ladies' hockey team won Olympic gold in Moscow. Indeed, it may be argued that it was this arrogant self-confidence that led a handful of settlers to believe they could take on the whole of Africa and the world and win. And that is what led to their demise after declaring unilateral independence. But those who knew them understood it could not have been any other way.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
With all the junk food, fast food, and pre-cooked meals out there, do people actually consume the nutrients that will improve their health? Everyone starts with good intentions. A few pills here, a glass of juice there, but what about an entirely new approach to wellness? What about a brand new market of nutrient delivery? Triathletes and marathon runners often down small packets of gel, providing a timely blast of energy. And why couldn't this exact system work for daily consumption of vitamins and minerals? It can. Through suspension gel technology, our daily nutrients can be taken anywhere quickly and easily. Think about it. No glasses, no supersized pills, no waterlogged juices, no ineffective sprays and creams, just pure, concentrated nutrients in an easy-to-take, rapidly absorbed, taste bud-busting gel you squeeze in your mouth. A great way to get your daily nutrients. For more information to improve your health, call 1-888-841-6055. That's 1-888-841-6055. Or go on the web at together.ws.
Stay connected to what's happening at the Republic Broadcasting Network by visiting our website,
www.rbnlive.com.
At rbnlive.com, you'll stay up to date with our latest broadcast schedule, learn about upcoming events, read about our air personalities and the programs they host, take part in discussion forums, read the latest breaking news, and listen to RBN programs on your computer by connecting to our live broadcast stream. Plus, you can download previous RBN programs from the archive completely free of charge. That's right. Unlike other services, there is no charge to download programs from the RBN archive. Share them freely with others who are not yet listeners to the Republic Broadcasting Network and help spread the word. We're taking America back through the power of information. Stay connected to the Republic Broadcasting Network and our website, rbnlive.com.
Another ragtag band declaring independence. Laid their bodies down.
Welcome back, my friends. Robbie Noel sitting in for John Stadtmuller on this 5th of July. Telling you a story about an extinct species called Rhodesians. And I hope it helps make clear the efforts that those who are meeting for the G8 summit this week have no concept of, why aid to Africa is almost an impossible mission. Rhodesians, one could say, sowed the seeds of their own destruction literally from the day they arrived, because they were never able to embrace the diverse culture, the values, and the norms of the indigenous peoples. Their relationship was based on friendly but paternalistic efforts to convert the Africans and introduce them into unskilled labor-intensive jobs in industry and as servants in their homes. Personal relationships varied according to the amount of effort put into them and according to relaxed familiarity. It may honestly be said that up to and even during the Liberation War, relationships between the ordinary people of both cultures never deteriorated to the point one finds in America or the rest of the world, where blacks and whites are separate, unequal, and hostile towards one another. There were many Africans who were proud to call themselves Rhodesians, and the Europeans, in turn, were proud to be associated with those men whose ability and conduct were highly respected, particularly those in the police and in the security forces. However, it would be wrong to give any impression that the average man in the street, black or white, took any interest in the social lives of the other, or for that matter, that there was any social interaction of any kind. And this story is not made in any way, or any efforts are made to fabricate such misconceptions, because for the most part, the master-servant relationship remained and still remains to this day. The cultural gap was too wide and was seldom breached, and contrary to popular myth, perpetuated for political gain, was never based on racial hatreds, but on social, economic, educational, and religious beliefs and behavior. The working relationships between black and white remained friendly and cordial throughout that brief 73-year history, and was never the reason for the serious conflict that ultimately evolved. What did stimulate conflict to the point of war was the Malthusian nightmare known as the population explosion and the resultant demand for basic resources such as food, land, and water. The first world component of the economy, the so-called commercial sector, needed the resources to conduct intensive production to drive the economy forward. But the third world component, that of the indigenous people, began producing much larger families, and in a region of an average of 10 direct dependents per married man, they had doubled their life expectancy rate through modern medicine and welfare, and needed more land and resources to maintain their ancient culture and traditional lifestyles. Since then, the only statistics that have any real relevance, the alpha and omega of all that has gone before and all that is yet to come, and the only thing that can explain the African malaise are the census figures, undoubtedly the result of the civilization the pioneers brought with them. In 1890, when the pioneer column raised the British flag at Fort Salisbury, the total population of southern Rhodesia was estimated at 300,000. By 1969, it was up to 5 million, and today there are approximately 12 million people living there. While most of humanity heralds birth control as one of the greatest human achievements ever, Africa continues her reproduction orgy. She is blessed with a population that is expected to double every 10 years. In direct contrast to the aging populations of the developed world, the average age is permanently below 18 years. Traditional values hold that many wives and children represent wealth. The girls will fetch a dowry of cattle, goats, or chickens, while the boys will provide an old age pension in terms of extended family systems. All of this in a male-dominated land where the lack of emotional self-restraint is by far the most distinctive trait in behavior. One may laugh at the antics of the witch doctor who jumps onto a future president and clings to him like a monkey during a presidential inauguration, but it is not so funny when such spontaneity is the primary catalyst for decision-making or acts of unspeakable sex and violence. As we know, South Africa now has the dubious distinction of being the rape capital of the world, with 38,000 rape cases and approximately the same number of sodomy and child abuse cases are reported each year. We'll be back. We must
listening to Real Talk Radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Listen to what Cocoon GH has done for another satisfied user.
I've been meaning to let you good people know about my fantastic results after using the Cocoon GH for only a few weeks. Before I started using GH, I had severe pain in my right shoulder, to the point of not being able to take off my shirt. But within the first few days of using GH, I realized the pain was dramatically reduced. I could not believe it. I thought I was bluffing myself. Within another week, I had full use of my shoulder. The pain was nearly all gone. Also, my graying hair is about 75% less now, to my surprise. I have a lot better energy now. I feel like I can do a lot more. I have more will to go on and make life wonderful in my golden years. I started a physical fitness program because I feel so good. I have get up and go like when I was younger. I am really thankful for this product and will continue using it from now on.
Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325.
Why continue to suffer from pain, illness, and disease when natural health and wellness therapies are within your reach? Hundreds of people report improved health and wellness using Rife frequency technology. In the 1920s, research scientist Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease organisms can be destroyed using resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions frequency instrument uses this same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions. There are no side effects. Join others in discovering a return to natural health and wellness. Eliminate the cause. Don't just treat the symptoms. BioSolutions has over 550 pre-programmed auto sequences for various health conditions and is very easy to use. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. For more information, call Alternative Technologies toll-free 866-885-6625. 866-885-6625. One more time, that's 866-885-6625.
Would you like to have an income regardless of the economic situation, which few trade people have considered? The art of knife sharpening is a skill that will never disappear and will always be in demand. Whether you have a place of business and just want to add to your income, or would like to travel servicing restaurants, barbershops, or a variety of businesses in need of sharpening tools, you're always guaranteed an income with repetitive business. Learn how to become a successful grindsman. It's easy to learn with our portable Grambo sharpening system. Travel anywhere you desire. Purchase the training manual for only $30, and it'll be applied toward your purchase of the Grambo sharpening system. America has become a service-oriented rather than a manufacturing or even high-tech economy. Take advantage of the situation and become a professional grindsman. It's easy to learn. Start on a shoestring with the overwhelming amount of business out there. Now is the best time to start. Call today for more information. You can enjoy the good life. Call now, 512-297-3152. That's 512-297-3152.
You're tuned in to the National Intel Report, the real talk radio show.
Robbie Noel sitting in for the recovering John Stadtmuller, talking about a little country called Rhodesia in light of the G8 meeting this week, in the hope that somebody may hear this, figure out how to solve the plights of Africa. It may be said that by the middle of the 20th century, Rhodesia was a microcosm of the path of unrestrained growth in humanity that now inflicts the world. The reproduction orgy had overwhelmed the gulf between the minority haves and the huge majority of have-nots. Any attempts at providing education, food, or housing were drowned in a sea of deprivation and want. Even if the finances could be found for massive development projects to build schools, hospitals, and prisons, it would simply be tinkering with the effects and not the cause. But as a survival mechanism, the population explosion is a magnificent success. Africa can outpace any epidemic, genocide, or starvation. Even the scourge of AIDS is no threat to a population growth. In a world where one man, one vote democracy is all that is acceptable, procreation is rewarded with political power. It is a major asset, second only to the historic precedents of victimization. All that the majority tribes need to do is keep on trucking. By the late 50s, the standard of living of the indigenous peoples of Rhodesia was the highest for the entire African continent. Conditions were even better than in the Congo under the Belgians. But there was no way that the European immigration rate or the demand for housing, education, and health services provided by the taxpayers could keep up with the population explosion. The ratio of 21 to 1 was just too much to sustain in a civilized manner. As early as the 1960s, the balance between First World and Third World had been permanently lost. The ecological change to the tribal trust lands, reservations set aside for traditional life, was clearly evident. They could no longer support the increased population and became the hotbeds of discontent that were later to be exploited by the terrorists. The land issue was and still is central to the conflict between the cultures in Africa. Land is a gross simplification of the real issues involved. Africa is, after all, a huge continent with a small population density per square mile. Therefore, it is useful to spend a moment to get this issue into perspective. Indigenous people use land to extract Mother Nature's gifts without having to put anything back. They are too poor to put anything back. Land is used to collect firewood, trap wild game, or for grazing cattle, goats, and keeping chickens. Working the land, tilling the soil, has never been a particular popular form of subsistence. If they were given a bag of seed, there's a very good chance they would eat it. There are many reasons for this, ranging from weakness through disease to erratic rainfall to hard work without tools. The continent is littered with billions of dollars worth of rusting farm machinery that lasted only as long as it took to use up a tank of fuel or to set the injectors. There are stories of countlessly failed schemes sponsored by the United Nations, the World Health Organization, the World Food Organization, and the like, all trying to get the locals to plant cash crops like groundnuts and beans. To help these people use the land, the World Food Organization has learned that they must literally plow the fields, sow the seeds, reap the harvest, and feed the population. At subsistence level, seed that by chance gets planted and germinates is either eaten by rodents, birds, baboons, or elephants. It is not surprising, therefore, that the aid agencies have given up the struggle. They have adopted a philosophy of to heck with it. It's easier just to beg food from the productive donor countries and just hand it out in 50-kilo bags. This fuels wars, it feeds dictators, and it gives rise to the intractable Ubuntu dependency. But it massages the colonial guilt trip. And we can't very well leave all those people's children to starve, now can we? So let's get it right. The first step in the development of any modern civilization, the ability to feed oneself on a controlled and sustainable basis, otherwise known as the agrarian revolution, just never happened. There are no fields of crops raised in starving rural Africa. The last floods and droughts did not destroy the latest harvest. That is a fraud. Those things never existed. It is the missionaries and the settlers with their wheels, their tractors, their plows, the fertilizer, the management skills that maintain the notion of intensive agriculture to support a good life. There are huge differences in ideologies that come from these extreme opposites in the socio-economic spectrum. Therefore, when one talks of the land issue, one is referring to the allocation of free or heavily subsidized land for vast majority on the one hand and the very expensive commercial property belonging to a tiny minority on the other. Now, to understand this issue, one must not be tempted to be bedeviled by logic with the reality that the minority rich owns a disproportionate share of planet Earth. that this is a universal economic phenomena where 200 of the most powerful families, including the Queen of England, control 80% of the world's resources through the acquisition of property rights. No one is expected to see this in a purely racial context. The white farmers have got the goods, and the black peasants have not. In the first instance, the land has been devastated by soil erosion and poor husbandry. Most of the trees have been cut down for firewood, and every living thing has been killed or eaten. Since the land can no longer sustain traditional life, the demand for more land or relocation close to town with all the infrastructure in place, water on tap, roads, electricity, possibly even houses and toilets, is overwhelming. In this way, huge tracts of perfectly good virgin land is abused or abandoned as being bad farmland, and greedy eyes covet the white man's cultured fields. Why not, if you can get it for free? And who cares if it becomes bad within a few seasons of abuse? The tragic paradox for the poor, ignorant peasants is that the moment they are given the land, it no longer has any value. The laws of supply and demand immediately place the same value on that land as the peasants themselves do, which is zero. They cannot use that land as collateral to raise money. They cannot sell it because there is no market for it, and they cannot live off it because it is worthless. Indeed, the issue is not about land at all. That is the red herring designed to give the cause some respectability. The issue is about all the free goodies that must come with it, things to make life more comfortable. We are talking here about irrational demand for socialist largesse, with not the slightest notion of who might pay for it. In the second instance, a tiny minority represented by the capitalist white man has placed a value on land. His pioneering forefathers brought great tracts of it at bargain prices. Since then, they have intensively worked that land, they plowed it, they built dams, and they put infrastructure on it, and now own most of the good, productive, and desirable areas. The emotions that this situation generates between the haves and the have-nots is what all African leaders like Robert Mugabe exploit when elections are near. Then they unleash the mongrels of anarchy, the so-called war veterans, most of whom were not even born before the liberation struggle, to burn and pillage any evidence of progress. Perhaps a little primitive racial hatred whipped up against a politically insignificant minority is good for a few votes. Using logic that will forever escape normal intellect, the politicians put it about that if you happen to be a black man, all land is your birthright, that if you are white, you have to buy the land and your property rights are not secure. But wait a minute, you may say, there's a light at the end of this tunnel for despots. There is someone who is willing to pay. All that is needed is to move things along a little, is to kill a few white farmers, beat and burn their workers with paraffin, and then chase them off their land, and bingo. £45 million, colonial guilt money from the British taxpayer. Enough to feed one's cronies and buy the next election. Blackmail and extortion. Yes, it is, but a successful strategy for a deranged communist dictator with half his brain rotted away by syphilis. Oblivious of the tensions that prevailed because of the land issues, the story we are telling you is about those of us who grew up in a wonderful, carefree world, roaming the landscape, learning about wild animals and all of Mother Nature's blessings. Adolescence was a blur of big American cars, Elvis, rock and roll. But as we became young men, things changed. Anyone looking for a Rhodesian or the so-called Rhodesian way of life after the breakup of the Federation could not have found them, for that signaled the end of Britain's support of any more white adventures in Africa. Those that stayed soldiered on The ingenuity and initiative were real enough. They designed and built their own industrial and agricultural machines. Sanctions busting became an enjoyable challenge and an art form. And the country remained viable and economically self-sufficient in all things. They graduated from high school. They printed their own currency. The 10 bob, or the shilling, became a dollar. And there were $2 to the old English pound. As young men, we lived, loved, fought, and some of us died there. The end only came long after unilateral declaration of independence in 1965. Indeed, life and development were good right up until Christmas of 1972, when the botched terrorist attack on Mark de Borgrave's farm just outside of Salisbury signaled the tide of humanity could no longer be contained in an acceptable balance. By then, Rhodesians were just when we were, fighting to bring back the good old days. As in all wars, the young people were being asked to pay an increasingly high price in lives and family prospects to hold up the old illusion. To their way of thinking, the old pioneers have proved to the world that through their adventurous spirit, enterprise, and hard work, there was a way to bring progress and civilized Christian standards to Africa. They did not understand that the Western world was not really interested in supporting those standards. In the enlightened New World, all sorts of past aberrations, ranging from homosexuals to voodoo religions, were now protected as normal, and any reference to Christianity was no longer politically correct. The beliefs and values of the Rhodesians, like Christian doctrine itself, were bankrupt. Thanks to Charles Darwin's theories on an ever-evolving and dynamic creation, where the fossil records were showing fish with fingers and amphibians with hands and feet, proof of evolution and natural selection were becoming clearly visible. Scientists were mapping out chromosomes to prove that we were all different, and there was never any perfection for Adam and Eve to sin against. Men like Stephen Hawking were openly saying that we are just an advanced breed of monkeys on a minor planet on a very average star. Responsible government notwithstanding, they simply could not understand all those home truths, or that their kith and kin back in Britain had written off Africa as a liability and needed to hand over all interests as a grand gesture and atonement for their colonial sins. Britain just wanted to get the hell out of there and have no comebacks when the wheels fell off. They needed to pass the responsibility of Africa into African hands to give credence to what they knew was the absurd notion that by doing so, this somehow would empower the people. Any hands would do as long as they were black. The Brits had, of course, been in the colonial business for a long time. They were tough customers to deal with, and they have a vicious streak in them. So Rhodesia was at least relieved to have the concession that Britain was not prepared to fight the terrorist battles for them. The liberation movement found support from the communists in both Russia and China and formed themselves into terrorist gangs divided along tribal lines. The Shona people called themselves ZANU, and the Matabele were called ZAPU. These comrades were, of course, delighted with the political developments in Britain. They mobilized the rural people by whatever methods necessary. Soon, horrific tales of mass intimidation and murder emerged from the rural areas and the African townships. They took what they saw as theirs, indeed what the world desperately wanted them to have. Security forces had little trouble dealing with the terrorists from the military point of view, but they quickly learned that their contempt for fighting ability of the terrorists, the garden boys with guns, if you will, was misplaced and should have been seen in a much broader context. 20 years later, senior cabinet ministers in the new South African government belatedly lamented that there is a terrible culture of violence, crime, and lack of moral fiber in Africa. There is no satisfaction in dwelling on the appalling downward spiral of human failure that characterizes the coming of the liberation war. And this story is not intended to be "I told you so," because it is much too tragic for that. However, when the widow of one of the great authors of liberation literature, Alan Parton, famous for his book Cry, Beloved Country, decides to save herself by returning to England, then perhaps that is a small indicator as to why the Rhodesians decided to stand and fight.
Introducing the world's best air purifier, the Aeronizer. The Aeronizer produces high levels of activated oxygen right from the air you're breathing. It works the way nature does. It's so powerful it kills molds and mildews, as well as bacteria and viruses in the air and on the surfaces in your home. Made in the USA of the finest materials, with an unconditional 2-year warranty. Call 877-605-9200 or visit the website at www.aeronair.us.
If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
With all the junk food, fast food, and pre-cooked meals out there, do people actually consume the nutrients that will improve their health? Everyone starts with good intentions. A few pills here, a glass of juice there, but what about an entirely new approach to wellness? What about a brand new market of nutrient delivery? Triathletes and marathon runners often down small packets of gel, providing a timely blast of energy. And why couldn't this exact system work for daily consumption of vitamins and minerals? It can. Through suspension gel technology, our daily nutrients can be taken anywhere quickly and easily. Think about it. No glasses, no supersized pills, no waterlogged juices, no ineffective sprays and creams, just pure, concentrated nutrients in an easy to take, rapidly absorbed, taste bud busting gel. You squeeze in your mouth. A great way to get your daily nutrients. For more information to improve your health, call 1-888-841-6055. That's 1-888-841-6055. Or go on the web at together.ws.
Looking for a quality shortwave radio without spending hundreds of dollars? The Sanjin 505P shortwave radio is the answer. Featuring continuous tuning for all shortwave frequencies utilizing direct keypad tuning. Dual conversion improves shortwave image for better shortwave reception. Single sideband allows for reception of upper and lower sideband signals. Other features include 45 station memory, auto preset system, auto memory scan, tone controls, dual time display, and adjustable sleep timers. Included accessories, the AMT60 portable shortwave antenna, AC adapter, stereo earbuds, and a soft-sided carrying case. Also, a 1-year full factory warranty on parts and labor. All this for only $139. Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200. Call today.
We often hear the term when talking about Rhodesia, white fear. The term white fear is scornfully used when politicians try to reason why it is that once black governments are in control, white flight becomes inevitable. To give this behavior some perspective, it may be useful to know the dynamics that have in fact become reality since the War of Liberation, if only to decide if these white fears are irrational. During the process of liberation, or whatever one wishes to call it, the fundamental element is the transition from first world management and control to those in the third world. We are not talking here of an orderly transfer, as may be experienced when the Republicans take over from the Democrats or conservatives from Labor. No, sir, we are talking about a permanent transition back into the culture of Africa, where all the Western principles and values one grew up to believe in are up for grabs. Nothing is sacred, and all the pillars of an organized state begin to break down. This is the point where the few people who have been trying not to screw up their lives officially become guilty and must pay the price for the multitude who do. It's uniquely African government policy called the redistribution of wealth. And in a society that is represented by a normal distribution curve, the relatively strong 80% of the population help the 20% that are too young, old, sick, or down on their luck. And this is a wonderful thing. But in an abnormal population curve where 80% must be supported by only 20% who are able, then that is socialism. It's communism. It's humanism gone mad. And this is the vortex that has caused Africa to implode. And up until these group of white people meeting in Scotland this week come to understand this truism, there will never be anything but platitudes and self-congratulatory handshakes in order to try and appease and solve the problem of black Africa. They are kidding themselves, and they are kidding anybody who wants to believe it. Once again, we are dealing with a perception that most people have of the Dark Continent. But unless you've lived there, unless you've worked there, unless you've understood the people, have you any concept of how you can give any glimmer of hope for survival in Africa? And unfortunately, to speak openly, honestly, and truthfully about what Africa's problems are and how to solve Africa's dilemma, unfortunately, it will always be mired in the racist context. Stand by, my friends. We got another hour to go. Hour number four for yours truly, sitting in for the recovering John Stadtmuller. And if memory serves me correctly, we have a change. Well, I don't do these shows that often. I think we have a change in signal, and I don't know what it is. 7466 says the voice in my head. We'll be back.
Everyone agrees our children are the future leaders of this great nation. How can we expect the founding values of our great republic to continue with future generations when these same values are being phased out of the government-run school system? There is a solution. The Little Red Schoolhouse Project, a community-based school system founded by Dr. Jake Wade to provide a biblical and constitutionally based education for our children. Help us prepare the next generation in our fight for freedom. Ask us how you can help by writing to Providence Christian Academies, 280 Tenny Creek Road, Dale, Texas, 78616, or by calling 512-398-4833. Once again, that is Providence Christian Academies, 280 Tenny Creek Road, Dale, Texas, 78616. Support your local Little Red Schoolhouse. Call 512-398-4833 and ask how you can help ensure no student is turned away.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.